Hours of the Fury is brought to you by Red Nation Online. Find us on Twitter at Red Nation Online and at OIT Fury.
Welcome to episode 81 of Our Sister Fury. Here with me today is Ryan.
Hello.
And Tim.
Hey, how's it going?
Going pretty good here. I'm getting pretty excited for season 4 of Ottawa Fury. A lot has changed since last year.
Quite a few things.
A few players, maybe the league.
But the one thing that stays constant is the Our Sister Fury podcast. We're going to stick around just like we have in the past. We may make a few changes. I'm not sure if we're still going to be weekly. I think we're just going to record whenever we feel like it. How does that sound?
It sounds good for my schedule.
Yeah. Yeah, scheduling's tough, but we'll try to put out as much as we can when we can.
And then the other change is that we're not going to focus exclusively on Ottawa Fury anymore. Instead, we're going to talk about Ottawa soccer in general a bit more, broaden our spectrum a little bit.
There's other soccer besides the Ottawa Fury?
Yeah, I know. It's very surprising, isn't it?
What other soccer is there?
Well, there's two new League Ontario clubs. On the women's side, that is West Ottawa Soccer Club, who have a little bit of a misleading name because they actually play at Beckwith Field in Carleton Place, but we'll count them. We'll cover them.
They're kind of like west of Ottawa SC.
Very west. Ottawa. Pretty west Ottawa FC.
That's pretty exciting, though. We finally have a women's team back.
Yes. That is good news, although we'll have to rent a car to go watch them, but we'll deal with it.
You know,
and then on the men's...
You mean OC Transwell doesn't go all the way to Carleton Place?
It goes to Carleton, I know that.
I think those are two different places.
Took me a while to figure that out when I moved here.
Speaking of Carleton, on the men's side, we also have a new League One Ontario team. Ottawa South United, Force, OSU Force. And they're going to be playing at Carleton. And I think also at Terry Fox.
So we have a men's team and a women's team for League One Ontario in the region.
Yes. And, of course, FC Gatineau, the PLSQ team as well. But for those listeners who've never heard of League One Ontario, Ryan, can you just walk us through what that is exactly?
League One Ontario is, especially for our new listeners from USL circles, is the Canadian Third Division. So it's a league of 16 men's teams, and it was only started back in the first season was 2014. The league was formed in November 2013. So there's 16 men's team, and at current there's 11 women's team. So pretty interesting league. It's pretty high quality. I would say it's better than the Canadian CSL that some people have told me is our pro league here in Canada. And I'd say it's somewhere in between PDL and USL for quality as a reference point for any American listeners.
Great. Yeah, I'll definitely go check them out. And later on in the podcast, we'll tell you where all of these teams can be watched and when their first home opener is. In terms of our Ottawa Fury, a lot of off-season changes. The biggest one, of course, is we're no longer part of the North American Soccer League. Boo. So instead, we play in the USL. Tim, what's the USL?
The USL was the division under NESL. It's currently made up of independent teams, teams with affiliations with MLS teams, and teams, academy teams run by MLS teams. And after the Fury and the Tampa Bay Rowdies moved to the USL is now Division II along with NESL. So it's kind of even. I don't know how it's really any significance, because there's still no pro rel, so they can't move. So it'll be interesting to see how the two teams, or how the two leagues match up with each other.
Yeah, so basically the different tiers of play are just more or less randomly decided by the U.S. Soccer Federation. So everyone was... Go ahead, Ryan.
I wouldn't say it's random, though. It's like based on a... They have to be a certain market size. They have to have proper facilities, stadiums, certain budget levels. So it's not random. But the USL never fully met the Division II, all the qualifications, because they had some teams that, you know, like Harrisburg and others that didn't fully meet Division II status, but they were given Division II status anyway. So, and at the same time, NESL were missing some time zones and had some issues, and they were able to keep their Division II status. So,
So instead of having a Division II NESL and USL Division III, we now temporarily have two Division IIs until further ruling from the U.S. Soccer Federation. So in a way, the league change is a lateral move for the Ottawa Fury. So we didn't self-relegate. We're still in the same level, just a different league. So in the USL, there's a lot more teams than the NASL. I believe this season the NASL has shrunk to just 8 leagues. Whereas in the USL, there are how many teams?
There's 30.
And they're divided up into two divisions, the East and the West, and we're, of course, in the East. Or they're called conferences, I guess, right?
Yeah.
Okay, and pretty much half of them, of each division, make the playoffs? Or am I getting that right?
Yeah, I think Tim can elaborate more, but the 8 teams on each side make the playoffs.
Yeah. So that's 16 out of 30 will make the playoffs, a little over half. And then, the playoff format is just one game, kind of a pyramid, one game until you have an East Conference finalist and a West Conference finalist, and they play off for the USL title, which is called something equally as lame as the soccer ball, I assume.
The Soccer Cup.
I like it. So basically, we're new to this league. So if you've listened to us since season one of ours as the Fury, we eventually get the hang of it. So, you know, we're going to learn as we go ahead. Like, I never really watched the USL. Ryan, I know you kind of watched the USL a little bit.
Yeah, I did watch a couple games a week in the past, and I used to like go to USL games when it was much different than it is now.
How about you, Tim?
No, I never watched any USL game.
That's a lie. Tim is a big Pittsburgh Riverhounds fan.
I watch more indoor than I watch USL.
So yeah, I have to be honest, I'm going to miss the NASL quite a bit. I like the quirkiness of it and the whole anti-MLS stance of it. And, I wish them best of luck. And I'm going to give the USL the benefit of the doubt. But to be completely honest, I'm not super excited about being in this league.
I find it a mixed bag. Like, there's good teams and there's things to look forward to. And then there's the league is so big. There's also teams that aren't so exciting to watch. One will be our next opponents, St. Louis FC. Found them, watched them 2 times now, and both times I wish I didn't watch them at all.
Yeah, there's also the farm teams or the academy teams that aren't specifically put out there to win each game and more to develop their players, which is kind of maybe a bit off-putting for some people.
Although last year Red Bull, two ended up winning the whole thing, eh?
Yeah.
Yeah, and Sporting farm team there.
Swope Park Rangers.
Yeah, Swope Park. They're actually quite a decent team. And like, I caught a bit of a TFC2 last night. I caught a half, and they looked really good. They actually had a lot of first team players, well, two or three, in their starting lineup too, like Chapman and Endo was playing as well. So it's a mixed bag. It's sometimes you don't see awesome soccer, and then sometimes it's what one of my friends called hackball. So they just hack at it and just goes up in the air. And there's no real like football that we're used to.
Well, we'll certainly see how it goes. And then the other big change is concerning us and the Montreal Impact. Tim, do you want to elaborate on that?
Yeah, so Montreal and the Fury signed an affiliation agreement. Basically, it boils down to they can, quote-unquote, loan us 4 to 8 players for full-time, for full season, and they can also loan us, like, players who are on injury, coming back from injury, and just to kind of get their feet under them for, like, short-term loans. That's about it. They also have they're gonna also play a friendly during the year sometime here, which I'm not too excited about, but some people would be, I assume. And that's about it, basically. FC Montreal's MLS Academy team of last 2 years, I believe. They didn't want to run it. I guess no one went to it. It was probably a bit like, I think it averaged less than 100 fans, so they just kind of wanted to get away with it and send them to Ottawa and help Ottawa out, and Ottawa help Montreal out.
Anything you want to add to that, Ryan?
It hasn't been 100% clear if they're loans or there are signings. I know for sure that their MLS rights are still held by Montreal, but they're... hasn't been completely clear what's going on there, and like, who's paying the salary? Are we paying the salary, or is Montreal paying the salary? So it's kind of hard to figure out who's benefiting from this relationship with these like small handful. I think there's 4 players at the moment in our lineup. So I'd like to have some answers on that.
Yeah, the biggest concern from the fans' perspective is are the Ottawa Fury still independent, or are we just a reserve team for the Impact? And from all that I've learned so far and the way that we present ourselves, like, we're very much still an independent team, and we get the choice of which players we want on the team. Like, they're not dumping a bunch of players they don't want onto our squad or anything like that. So there might be some positive things that come out of this agreement.
Yeah, it's not a real grand Houston Dynamo kind of relationship. It's definitely something different. It sounds like we kind of get first dibs on players that would want to play here, I guess. That's the impression I got. But.
Right. Other changes. Martin Nash left Ottawa after 3 years as assistant coach. And our captain, Julian De Guzman, retired and is now our assistant coach.
Yeah, it works out well. It's tough to see Martin Nash leave. I don't know if he's got another job. I did a quick search before the podcast and didn't see anything. So hopefully he kind of lands on his feet and becomes a coach someday, because I thought he was really good here. But Julian De Guzman was I wasn't say nice to see him retire, but it was nice to see all the press he got. And it'll be tough not to see him on the field again, but at least we get to see him off the field and help develop some of these players.
Yeah, it was quite an emotional press conference when he retired. If you haven't watched it, I'd suggest catching that.
Yeah, the Guzman's kind of a... I guess he's broke a lot of ground for Canadian soccer players in Europe, and his career is really something for younger players to aspire to. As far as Nash is concerned, we're really going to miss his connections. He brought in a lot of good players. A lot of our best signings had to do with him in the second and third season. So hopefully he gets a job in a new league or with a new team somewhere, or a current team. It would be good to see him again.
So then the question becomes, if Julian de Guzman is no longer our captain, who is our captain now?
Someone from Iowa.
Yes, it is Lance Roseboom. You guys watched all of last year. I only watched the first half, and then I traveled the world. So tell me more about him. Is he a good? Is he leadership material?
Yeah, I think so. I thought. Who did I thought? I thought there's another player. I can't remember who it was. But I thought it should have been captain ahead of him. But I was quite happy when I heard it was him. He played really well. He was really good in midfield. He's more defensive. Dictating the play. I think he was the reason why Johnny Steele was let go halfway through the season, because he played so well in the midfield. And hopefully he can take over the reins of the captaincy and kind of move this team forward.
Ryan, what do you think?
Yeah, he was steady. He was a good steady player. I don't know what he's like in the room, how much of a leader is. It's important to note that he was in Austin with the Aztecs with that Gleish before. So he's definitely someone that has the coach's ear and vice versa. So that relationship's strong, and that may have maybe one of the reasons why the manager trusts him and put him in as captain.
Yeah, and he has a ton of USL experience. I mean, he played with the Rochester Rhinos as well. So he definitely knows what he's doing. Another new thing from a supporter's perspective is that Section W's location has been changed, and it will now be on the east side, possibly behind the net, right?
The supporter section has changed. If you have tickets that say Section W on them, please still go to Section W and have a seat and enjoy some popcorn. Yeah, but yeah, we're behind the net. It's crazy.
Yeah, some temporary stands are going to go in. It's unclear if it's going to be right behind the net or off to the east side. I've seen people mention and seen diagrams of both. So it'll be interesting to see. It looks like it'll be just like aluminum benching like we had at Carlton, which is better or worse, how you depend on it.
Did you get your tickets yet, Tim?
No.
Yeah, neither did I, because I'm not sure what I'm buying. So, but I will get my tickets. But I just I want to be able to see the match, most importantly. So.
Yeah, that's the one thing I'm most concerned about is the vantage point. I really worry that you won't have a good view of the game.
Yeah, and considering they're the same price as Section W was last year, where you're paying the same amount for a much worse view. If it is, I don't know, depending on where the stands end up.
Yeah, it's one of those things you don't know until you're there, right?
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. But if it means that there will no longer be a bouncy castle, that's probably a good thing.
That's still there. That's on the other side.
Oh, I have a really hard time with my west and east from the stadium's point of view. So you're talking about where the hill is? Is that where the support section is going to go?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
I think it's movable, so it'd be in the end zone of like the CFL end zone, and they'll just move it out for CFL games. That's what I assume.
Gotcha.
It's kind of a bad idea to put like spectators over top of the turf, though.
I don't know how it's going to work.
Spill food or whatever. Yeah.
But considering the Grey Cup this year and the outdoor game later this year, they're going to be putting a lot more temporary stands in both sides. So we'll see how that works out, and maybe that's part of it or not.
Do we know at all what the reasoning is, why they decided that we would need a new supporter section?
I think it's just to charge people more for Section W. I agree with how it looked like Section W was one of the, it was the second highest, second or third highest paid seats, and they're just kind of giving them out really cheap to the supporters, and the supporters unfortunately have been kind of dwindling in numbers last year, so it was kind of like, you know, like a half full section that they could have sold for more, but it's half full, so maybe they tried to hammer something out with the supporters groups, and maybe that's what they came up with.
Yeah, that makes sense.
I totally agree. That's and it's probably a good idea, honestly. But I can tell you for sure that there wasn't any discussion with supporters groups about where the new section would be. There's some talking last year about going to the other side in the middle, but that was about it. So it was kind of a surprise to a lot of people, and they're just like, oh, okay. Most people are like, oh, okay. And so that's how it's been. So.
All right, moving on to another topic of interest. We did discuss the League One Ontario teams, but we didn't talk about our PLSQ side across the river, FC Gatineau. There have been some changes in this Division Three leagues. Ryan, can you walk us through those?
Yeah, so we're done. Like we said earlier in the podcast, we're going to concentrate more on the Division III teams in the city. So now that we have three of them, and there's rumor of a fourth one starting up. So on the PLSQ side, it's the Premier League of Soccer for Quebec. It's a 7-team league. There's a couple new teams this year. Quebec Dynamo, which is a long-running program, which is very similar to the Ottawa Fury program before we joined the NASL. So it's very exciting to have them come in. And there's a new team east of Montreal, Saint Hubert, and we don't know much about them. They have been running for a while, but they haven't put many teams up in the higher levels of soccer. So what's exciting for people in the region here, for FC Gatineau, there's a new owner. It's run by the Hall Soccer Association, so I think you're going to see more players that need to be developed. Now, you're not going to see like these 29-year-old guys playing against these like 19-year-old kids anymore. I think you're going to see more focus on development and moving these players on to bigger clubs. So that's exciting. I think it's going to be a good season for soccer in Ottawa. We got a lot going on. So
yeah, definitely a lot of stuff going on in the capital region. So that's a lot of content already. Why don't we take a break, and then we can go through the Ottawa Fury squad and how the preseason went, and finally we'll preview the game against St. Louis FC. All right. So before we talk about how the preseason went, why don't we go through Ottawa Fury's new players? So, plenty of changes. Don't know if it was as drastic as it was from 2015 to 2016, but lots of turnover. Starting with the keepers, we have a brand new number one keeper, Callum Irving, Canadian, has one cap for Canada. Was developed by the Whitecaps. He played in the academy there, and he already has some USL experience. I looked it up earlier. I think he's played like 15 or 14 games for Rio Grande. And then we have another new keeper, right, Tim?
Yeah. This is one of those Montreal, quote-unquote, perhaps low-D players, in David Pullman. Probably butchering that. Not allowed. He's pretty young. There's not a lot of info on him playing, and he's probably going to be our third keeper, so probably won't see him too much in the nets for the Fury this year.
All right, and what can you tell us about Ramon Martin del Campo, Ryan?
You do that way better than I did. Yeah, so he's American with, I don't know if he was born in Mexico and like grew up in the States or vice versa. It's hard to tell now. There's so many players on both sides, but he played for Puerto Rico last year, so you definitely saw him. He was playing alongside Ramon last year, Soria, one of our former players. So I know he looks good. He's big. I like it.
Another new defender is Shane McKillany. Is that right, Ryan? You have Irish roots. How do you pronounce that?
Oh, you know what? I don't know. I'd go with McAlaney.
Okay.
He's Northern Irish, so.
Right. Totally different. Totally different. So, yeah, he spent most of his time at Derry City in the Irish top flight. He's 6'2", so big guy. Obviously, I've never seen him play, but maybe someone for the starting 11?
Yeah.
Tim. I mean, he's probably it's where Richie Ryan came from. Not the same team, but the same league. He played there all his life, just finally decided to come over to Canada. He's probably one of the top players the Fury signed, and probably one of the more exciting ones from my perspective that I actually want to see this coming year.
Great. And another new defender is Adria Campbell. Ryan, what can you tell us about him?
Oh, Campbell. Well, you know, I think our defense doesn't look good this year. This guy, another guy, Jamaican player, played for the national team. Spent some time with the old Orange County Blues, not the redone Orange County Blues, but he has some experience in this league. And let's hope, you know, where we've suffered in the past is we always had smart defenders, but we never had quick defenders. So let's hope we have a quick defender with Mr. Campbell.
Okay, and then the two remaining new defenders are both Impact loanees. The first one is Aaron McClua. I'm so sorry for butchering your name, Aaron.
McCungawa, I believe it is.
Okay, much better attempt than me. He's young. He's 20 years old. He scored 2 goals last year with the FC Montreal, so he already knows the USL. And then there's also Thomas Meyer Giger. Right. He's an Impact loanee as well, 19 years old, and he also has that USL experience with FC Montreal. Moving on to the midfield. What can you tell us about Jonathan Barden, Blocksmith?
He's English, so that's a thumbs up there. Spent last year with IBV in Norway, which is a place where we get a lot of players from, seemingly.
Yeah, there must be some kind of connection there. And then, Ryan, what can you tell us about Jimmy Shamar Sanin?
Yeah, great name, by the way. Jimmy, he just played a few games, just a handful last year with FC Montreal, but he was able to score a beautiful goal. And I think this is the guy that got the USL goal of the year, if I'm not wrong about that. And but he doesn't have a lot of experience, but he is fast and he can cut in and out. Hopefully he's not like one of those step over, you know, magicians, but he looks good. I've just seen a few highlight clips, and he looks good, and Montreal's, you know, have him in the system, and they want to keep him, it sounds like. So,
yeah, if you haven't seen his goal, it's definitely worth checking out. It's the 2016 USL Goal of the Year, as you said. Another midfielder that's new is Sergio Manesio. He's a former Youth Academy product of Tottenham and West Brom Albion. How do you say that?
West Bromwich Albion.
Yeah. Oh my God. And he played last year in the NCAA for Cleveland State. So I don't know. I don't think he really has any pro experience.
No, he's just coming out of school. I guess he played youth academy games with some top English teams, but I guess didn't pan out much like Bruno did. So, pretty raw prospect, so hopefully he can come in and impress.
For sure, and that leaves us with 3 new forwards. Why don't we start with Steven Dos Santos? Ryan, what can you tell us about him?
He's tall. He's massive. Yeah, so Dos Santos is probably the most promising player on paper looking at this team this year. He did play last year in Rochester, and Rochester was a very strong side. He's been all over the world, Norway, played in Angola. I know it's exciting. He looks like a forward that you'd actually, you know, get the ball up to him. Kind of like what Tommy used to do. So we'll see. We'll see what happens this year. I'm pretty excited.
Great. And then we have Cito Ceoane. He's a Spanish-American striker. He also played in Norway, and he has USL experience as well. He played in Austin. And that leaves Tucker Hume. Tim, what can you tell us about him?
Tucker Hume, who signed, and they said Hume is signing for Fury, and everyone thought it was the other Hume. This Hume is also tall, 6'5". He's an American. He played last year also in the NCAA, played for the North Carolina Tar Heels, and they went to the final. So he looks good. Apparently in the preseason he's been scoring. So, yeah, it'd be good to see him on the field. Hopefully get some headers that Tommy Heinemann could not put in.
Right. we're definitely a taller team than we used to be, that's for sure.
Yeah, I think we're going to be putting some balls in the air. I think that's a part of the strategy. I haven't seen much of the team except for a few games that were broadcast in the preseason, so it's hard for us to tell you much about the team. It's been maybe a guarded secret of some sort. But yeah, it's going to be a different style of play. I think it's going to be more balls in the air and less build-up play.
Yeah, and we should also mention all the players that are returning to the Ottawa Fury. I'll just read them out to you. It's Andrew McRae, the goalkeeper, Eddie Edward, Jamer Dixon, Kyle Venter, who is of note because he missed all of 2016 pretty much with an injury. Obazi will be back, Ryan Williams, who's been doing the Wednesdays with Williams show, which I'm sure you've seen. Gerard Bruna, the captain, Lance Roseboom, and then Kyle Haworth, who's been with us since the PDL days. So he's the only one that's there since the first season in the NASL, I believe.
Yeah, Haworth's the last original. Yeah, if you're listening to a podcast for the first time, Tim's our historian, and he will pull out stuff out of nowhere. We'll shock you.
But, much like we haven't heard from Carl Haworth since March 3rd when he played against TSC2. He hasn't started or played any of the last two games, so he might be injured, so I don't know.
Yeah, and it's like we said, right now it's really hard to get information. Before, there's multiple sources of information. Multiple people had access to the team, but right now there's not much information, so maybe it'll change when the season starts.
Mm. Yeah, and this preseason was weird how many of the games were closed door. So we couldn't actually go and watch the team even when they played in our hometown. I mean, we reached out as part of our Sister Fury and we were denied entry. So we tried our best to get some views of the team, but information is really hard to come by when you can't even watch the games.
Maybe did we say something bad about the closed door games we went to last year? No, it was all good. Some of the players, you're probably wondering what happened to some of the players. I'll just quickly name a few. I noticed Maxim Tiso was playing for Richmond last night. He's actually signed a contract with DC United. And Balchan we got to see last night too. He's playing for the Pittsburgh Riverhounds. Cal Porter's in Tampa Bay. Tommy Stewart went back to Ireland playing for Dundalk. So Elvis is actually in Brazil, which is kind of cool. And this breaks my heart. Mauro Eustáquio playing for FC Edmonton.
So Don't
forget about the biggest loss last year is Pizer.
Where's he playing now?
He plays in San Francisco.
That's true.
With Tommy Heinemann and Mark DeSantos as a coach. And I saw a highlight last night, and he made like a really good save at the end.
Yeah. But there are some players we're going to see, former players, mm-hmm. but they're playing for other USL teams, like Mwanga's in Tampa Bay, Timbo's in Orlando City B, Timbo. Mm-hmm. DeBellis playing for Richmond. So
yeah, there's another Richmond. Didn't Becky go to Richmond as well?
No, Becky. Where's...
There's a couple of players in Richmond.
Yeah, Minitel.
Oliver Minitel.
He didn't play yesterday, though. So, So there's lots of interesting things in the USL and familiar faces. So we'll find the angles and the things to be excited about.
Yeah, Becky is not in the USL. He went to Jacksonville.
Okay.
Armada.
Right. Which kind of are the most USL NASL team.
if you view USL to be of inferior quality than NASL, yes. But the verdict is still open. Maybe they should have the winner of the USL play against the winner of the NASL to determine what the strong league is.
Who will the Cosmos play? You watched the Cosmos last night. They weren't as dominant as in past years. Or is Puerto Rico better?
Yeah, they're not as strong as they were the last couple of years. New owners. Puerto Rico's is a little bit better. They're playing at home, which just gives them a huge advantage. But yeah, it's probably the Cosmos. It's the Cosmos to win, I think, this year. But who knows?
Yeah, let's get back to 2017. Sorry.
Yeah, it sucks though that we can no longer talk about the NASL.
We just learned it. We just learned all the NASL teams.
Exactly.
All the players.
Now we have to move on to a brand new league.
With 30 teams to learn.
Although the NASL had a pretty turbulent offseason. I mean, it really looked there for a while as if it wouldn't even exist in 2017. But luckily, they, in part due to that Division II ruling, somehow survived. So that's good. We'll keep monitoring them. The NASL will always be dear to our hearts. All right, Ottawa Fury preseason. It started in on February 17th when we played the Ottawa Internationals, which is basically a bunch of 18 and 19-year-olds, right? It's a local soccer club from Ottawa.
How did they do?
They beat them 7-0, and they celebrated on the Twitter account as if they had just won the Club World Cup. There were a lot of snarky comments on Facebook and on Twitter from various users who were saying, you know, you don't have to celebrate. Like, this is an amazing accomplishment.
It's good to build those community ties and like, you know, spread the brand throughout the city.
Right. And then we had three preseason games while the Fury were in Florida training at the IMG Academy. One of them was against St. Louis FC, which we won 2-1. And we were actually able to watch that because that was streamed on a website, and it actually had commentary as well. One thing to note about that game is I believe they were 3 30-minute periods rather than a full game. Am I remembering that correctly?
Yeah, I believe so. I didn't see it because I didn't get home till late that night. But yeah, it was weird.
Yeah, and sub as much as you want as well.
Yeah, after 30 minutes, they would basically sub the entire team out. So it doesn't really tell you that much.
Yeah, and we also played OKC Energy, which is not rail.
OKC. No.
They're arch rivals in crosstown. And we've won. Oh, sorry, go ahead, John.
Yeah, we also won 2-1 against them, and then Ottawa Fury started building this undefeated narrative, and everyone was starting to feel very excited.
Yes.
And then in our next game against FC Cincinnati, that excitement died down a little bit because we only tied them 1-1.
Yeah, I did watch this game. It's interesting to note that last year, if you remember last year in the preseason, Pulcinieri got a red card, and he was suspended the next game. And he was told that that's the club policy, and I think that's kind of the event that, you know, forced him out of town. But Lance Rosenboom picked up a red card against OKC Energy, and in the next game played against Cincinnati. So it was just interesting to see. Like, apparently it's not club policy.
Yeah, and also red cards in these test games or preseason friendlies you don't actually lose a player. You can sub on a different player instead.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember that from last year, the club policy, which is basically I'm mad at this player and they're going to know it.
Right. Okay, and then the Fury came back home to Ottawa and did a away game at Toronto C2 at the Kia Field, and they lost 2-1. This game was not streamed, only Twitter updates, so we can't really tell you much about what occurred, but that was, of course, the first loss for the Fury.
Yeah, tough loss against our rivals, I want to say. But the Wolves,
So the way that the Voyageurs schedule is this year is that if we beat FC Edmonton, we'll play Toronto FC next. So it'll be much more fun to play the first team, I imagine. And then Toronto FC 2 will also be our home opener, so that'll be the first game at Lansdowne.
Yeah. And then we can't really tell you much about these games, but like on March 10th, they played against the Rhinos, lost 3-0. Rhinos are one of the better teams in the league, so I thought that would be a good telling test. And then what was the final game we played? There's two other games. We played Ontario League One All-Stars, which we won. We beat them, John. Mm-hmm.
4-2. Yeah, anything else would have been a huge surprise. I mean, these guys never play with each other, right? It was just a team made up of all the best players of League One Ontario. So,
yeah, probably, you know, the future of Canadian soccer against a USL side, basically. But and then the game against the Impact, we didn't actually play the Impact, did we?
There were a few players that you would recognize on the team. Oduro was there. What other names did I recognize that they put in their post-analysis article? Berna, what's that guy's name? Berna.
Yeah, there was five, but at the same time, like, how many minutes did they get? Did they play the full 90? Like, it'd be nice to know which players played and how much time, but it's just the details about the football have been very, very limited.
Yeah. The two goals that the Fury scored sounded really nice. Like, they were described to be absolute world beaters. So there's that.
Yeah, it's interesting. But, you know, we'll know more come April 1st, right? When we have our first game on the road and actually can have the proper stats. So yes. USL is using Okta. You notice that this year? The stat company, and they have everything in detail.
Yeah, but the NASL used that last year too, no?
Yeah, and it was a big help when trying to report on the games and figure out what's going on, like seeing which team actually held the ball more and what style of play was played and stuff.
But just to wrap up the preseason, I just want to say, pretty decent preseason, like more wins than losses, only one draw. I think the team should be pretty happy about themselves.
Yeah, I mean, it's preseason, so you can't really put too much stock into results. But they played seem to play a lot more games than they have in the past. So hopefully that helps them, because they've generally come out at the start of the season pretty poor every single year. So hopefully this helps them come out the season firing and to do well, because they're usually battling the first few games of the year, not really set and not really knowing what's going on. So hopefully it's a lot better for them this year.
We have played TFC 2 in the past in preseason and Rochester, so, and it's the first time we've lost to them. The you know, similar schedule. You notice there's no university teams this year, no Syracuse or anything like that. So it's probably a better test. We actually played a PLSQ team in the preseason a couple years ago as well. So I think this is a much better test than preseasons in the past.
That's true. Much better caliber of the teams that they picked. All right, that pretty much wraps up the preseason. So who are we playing first this weekend on Saturday, April 1st, 8:30 Eastern, Tim?
St. Louis FC. We beat 2-1 already in the preseason in 3 30-minute halves. But it'll be 2 45-minute halves this time, so it'll be a bit different. St. Louis is apparently supposed to be better this year. They finished 14th last year, so not very well, good. Preki is their coach. He's coached all over the place, including TFC. And we'll see at least one familiar face. Our original keeper, Deval Gorick, is their keeper. He moved from Colorado in the offseason.
He was a machine yesterday. He was just like under fire all match. They were dominated by Louisville, and he saved their team many times.
Yeah, I'm just excited for the season to begin again. I mean, these off seasons in North America are just crazy long.
Yeah. If anybody wants to watch, I believe it'll be streamed both on YouTube and the USL.com website.
Yeah, so access to games, I think, will be a lot easier this year as well. And the USL's, they're really, really good marketers. Like, it's a really good league for presentation, and they really care about the presentation. So we're going to see a similar. There's a couple things yesterday, but it wasn't like the NASL broadcast that we'd see, like a local TV channel would. I'm not talking about Ottawa here. I'm talking about the visiting teams. The local TV channels were quite bad at broadcasting the games, or they cut the commercial. The only thing that was weird yesterday was there was commercials until about the minute 45 mark of the Louisville St. Louis game. That's when the game started, and I was like, oh no, it's just like last year. But I watched about three other games yesterday, and they're all actually quite well done.
Yeah, that's good. It's important to be able to access games, every game, with a decent amount of quality.
Yeah, and it's your outward image, right? So that's what a lot of people see, and they'll judge your team or your league on is the quality of the broadcast. So.
Mm. Yeah. Yep.
Just looking for some positives here, and I think the marketing is going to be really good. I think the football, like I said before, is going to be hit and miss. Like, some games are going to be great, and other teams will play. It'll be like, why am I watching this? But I'm definitely excited to get April 1st going. Even more excited for April 22nd.
Right, because that'll be our home opener against TFC2. Because we're going to focus on other Ottawa area teams as well, just so you know, on May 5th, West Ottawa has their first game against Vaughan Azzurri. That's, of course, in Carleton Place. And then on May 13th, the OSU Force will play against the Toronto Skilled FC. And then May 14th, FC Gatineau will have their home opener against CS Saint-Hubert. And keep an eye out for @StonyMondayRiot on Twitter. They'll try and post all the home games of the Ottawa area teams going forward. And I think that pretty much wraps up our first podcast of season 4 of Ours is the Fury, unless there's anything else you guys want to say.
Yeah, I just want to point out Toronto Skills with a Z FC is probably the worst soccer team name I've ever seen in my life.
But a great hip-hop name. Your skills. Kick the ball.
But other than that, I have nothing to add.
All right. So it's a wrap. See you guys whenever we record next. You can get in touch with us on Twitter @OITFury or on Facebook. And we also have an email address that hasn't seen a lot of activity lately. It's Our Sister Fury Podcast. @gmail.com. Ryan, say bye.
See you guys.
Toodles.
hit save.